just to emphasize again, this week's material is really, you know, the heart of the process. It's the four steps and applying the four steps. And that's something you want to do with every client at least once in every session. Now, you know, having said that, it doesn't mean that you necessarily, although probably you do need to, but, you know, I don't always apply the steps in mechanical sequential order. They're actually more conditions than steps. You want to align all these five bodies. So we don't necessarily need to go in order, but you really need to sense and apply your empathic headgear at this point. You know, is my client aligning at all these five levels? And they may not be aligning with acceptance, for example. And so you might want to emphasize that more. Or they might not be, when they go into direct experience, they might not be able to move to an energetic level or to come into the moment. Because direct experience is about coming into the moment. You're fully out of the mind and you're into the moment. And being in the moment, you can clearly experience on a feeling level. Or they may be stuck in awareness, and, you know, awareness has so many levels. It's identifying the feeling that we did last week. Is it a core level feeling, first level emotion, reactive emotional impulse? And then can they take responsibility for that? And when you get really brutal trauma cases, it starts to get challenging, you know, when you have somebody who's had severe trauma. You have to be very diplomatic about applying the steps, but they still apply. You can't back down. You can't wimp out along with your client and say, oh, you poor thing, you were a victim. We have to get past being a victim. So in today...
Can I just go in, but I think that's a really important point and one that I would like to talk about more in case I ever get that. Say there has been something really horrific that a client has experienced, say child abuse or something, and you're trying to make them take ownership.
Right.
And yeah, I can see how difficult that is going to be to phrase that. Could you kind of talk me through an experience of yours?
Yeah, it's in my new book, which is going to be out any month now. I have an example of a sexual abuse, a severe sexual abuse case from both parents, and how we worked with it and how I walked her through the taking responsibility part. Basically, she had a lot of previous meditative psychic experience, and I think her feeling was that she could just sense the continuity of negativity from the past into the present, and that was the direction I steered her. So that was the way she did it. It was intuitive. It was right brain. Yeah, I can see where negativity, or I can feel where negativity from the past is drawing this negativity to me now. So that worked for her. Now, with somebody who might not be as intuitive or as agreeable to the principles, you just have to go more carefully. One of my favorite ones, and this is also in the book, that even if you don't agree with the assumption that negativity from the past is now attracting these horrific experiences to you, you may be in agreement with the idea that feelings that have been suppressed in the past need to be accepted now in order to be successfully processed. So let's apply taking responsibility only to the feelings.
Yeah.
and not the event. We can use the event as the movie and then put it aside and just focus on the feelings. And, you know, there's kind of this fine line between awareness and then acceptance, the two steps. Awareness means you're intellectually recognizing that there's karma, carryover. You want to go beyond being a victim. You want to go beyond being blameful. That's owning the feeling. That's owning the experience. But then when you get into step two, acceptance, that's still slightly different because you can still have a mental block to resisting the actual experience. So they both apply. You know, dropping blame is awareness, and then still dropping resistance is acceptance. You know, I think I just gave you the two main strategies to use.
Yeah, I think that only accepting the feelings.
Yeah, that's
I've just seen here we're not accepting, condoning, or giving permission for negative circumstances to continue. So you just absolutely nailed it in that. We're taking responsibility for the feelings.
Back at page 47, just to go through those, there are some, you know, the last one. I mean, we assume karma, okay? So we take our understanding of karma, I believe, to a little more sophisticated level. We say it's energy that has been brought with you into the present life, which results in your feelings and emotions. This energy is what attracts experiences to you. It's not just that you did something bad and now that's going to happen to you. It's a little more understandable. But, you know, that can be a maybe not a complete understanding of karma either. Maybe there's something more to it than that, and that I haven't gotten to yet. So it can mean that certain souls are given difficult experiences to strengthen them. That's, you know, a very viable experience as well. And when we talk about the higher self, we know we can talk about the higher self. You come into this life, your higher self splits off a part of itself into this very limited 3D existence. And it's given an agenda, a script, in order to develop certain qualities in the three-dimensional incarnate personality, which are also transferred to the higher self, because the higher self is actually developing from these experiences as well. That's the whole point of it. The higher self is not a finished product. You know, look at all the turmoil and horror in the world, which we in the modern world have actually been pretty fortunate in being able to avoid. But when you think about the Middle Ages in Europe and the horrors and the wars, and it's just like endless brutality and starvation, where, you know, 50 million people starved in Soviet Russia in the 1930s that hardly anybody knows about. You know, what an amazingly horrific experience. And is that karma working itself out? Who knows? You know, we can theorize about it, but if you were to get one of those people who had that experience in their previous life and they can recall it, what do you tell them? Well, you say, well, there's just, we don't know, but let's extend acceptance to those feelings in order to see if that will release them. See if you can do that, if only for the duration of this session. In my experience, that has worked with other people, and that's the process that we use.
The only person I could do it on at the moment, due to our bubble system here in New Zealand, which was my husband, because we're not allowed to go outside of our bubble yet. But that was a really interesting process, because he doesn't meditate, and I went through the process with him, and every time I said to him, and he's fairly skeptical, he doesn't want to be, but he is. And every time I went through the process and I got to the point to say, so how are you feeling now? He'd just be, I feel nothing. And he couldn't get into that state. And then he felt frustrated. And then he was kind of like, look, maybe I'm just not spiritual like you. Maybe I'm just shallow. And that's what came up. And I thought, it's actually quite good that it's happened, because I'd like to talk to you about what happens when someone can't get into alpha, and whether those emotions of frustration and judging himself are just as important to work with.
Yeah, they could be.
He definitely wasn't in alpha, though. He wasn't in a meditative state.
Yeah. Those feelings could be, but, I mean, they could relate to a core feeling, a core issue, but I wouldn't necessarily make the conclusion that they do. They could just be a reactive phase. He's being frustrated because he can't, you know, go along with what you're suggesting. So
he wants to, but can't.
Yeah. Well, you know, most people in the world are like that, where they're heavily into left brain and they haven't developed right brain meditative awareness. So that's kind of the way things are. And we don't want to be judgmental about that necessarily. That's where those people are, and maybe it's right for them. Maybe they're on a left brain path to develop left brain skills, and that would be mostly mental abilities. Mental would correspond to left brain. But for the most part, it's just, you know, a hope, well, maybe not even hopefully, but if the direction that we're going represents some kind of evolutionary direction, we would like to think that those people who are not there yet are going to be moving in that direction at some point, and they're going to be all around us, so we have to accommodate for them and not be condescending, you know, because we probably look pretty weird to them from their point of view. So
hello. Yeah. So has that happened with a client before? What, you know, have you had that in that situation, or do you really mainly get people who come to you because they are more right-brained?
Yeah. Most people who have come to me have read my book and they're sort of on board with it. But maybe 10% of the time, I would get somebody who I would say doesn't have right brain skills, that they're still in the left brain, and I would try to go carefully with them. But usually they wouldn't continue with the work, which is understandable because they just weren't going there. Maybe they got something out of it. But, you know, for those people, probably the path would be get them into a practice that will develop right brain meditative skills. And maybe the easiest, or one of the easiest practices would be a breathwork practice, because that kind of corresponds to science, even though I'm generally abhorring science these days. But, you know, science says, well, if you breathe more, you're going to be taking in more oxygen, you're going to feel better. Well, we know it's not oxygen, it's prana, but the breath can be a super tool for developing these skills that we're talking about. So that might be some place to start. But if nobody's attracted to it, then they're not going to be attracted to it. You know, they just have to be at that place.
My biggest work, what's coming up for me a lot right now is really wanting to be able to experience feeling my own emotions outside of a formal meditation. I know we probably haven't gotten there. It'll probably be addressed, but just trying to, I think it's important for me to be able to, at least at some level, be able to incorporate this technique effectively in my own life.
Sure.
And I found that a lot was being uncovered and coming up to the surface for me, things I hadn't seen before.
Great.
As far as being aware that I, a strong awareness that I do, like most people, repress my feelings a lot, and noticing how I do have a very difficult time feeling my emotions, not in this form of meditation. I'm able to bring them up and feel them, but just in everyday life, which I think is pretty important for me.
Sure.
So I wonder if we'll, I mean, there's no rush in going to that, but I hope that that maybe can be spoken to at some point, because I'm very aware of trying to be present and what does acceptance mean? What does it feel like when a difficult emotion comes up in my daily life? So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all excellent points.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, you could say it all goes back to witnessing, to mm-hmm. develop the witnessing capacity,
right.
So that when something comes up, you're already automatically detached and
mm-hmm.
not immersed in it, you know, identified with it,
mm-hmm.
overwhelmed by it, which is where most of us usually are. So developing
right.
that witnessing capacity is key for your basic spiritual practice and then for this work. So that's maybe a good way to think about meditation. Meditation is the practice of developing the witnessing capacity. Having a regular meditation practice with that in mind is one of the best ways to do it. And, you know, we're all on the path. We're all developing our skills. So just view yourself as this is where you are now. Now you're actually aware of the potential of witnessing and not being identified and overrun by feelings. That's a huge step forward in itself, where most people you know, just aren't there. Most people are identified with feelings, and maybe they feel like the best thing is to act out those feelings, to, you know, whenever something comes up, they just act it out, they blurt it out. They can become hostile, vicious, sad, all these fearful, you know, depressed. You know, no problem, just keep going in that direction. And then working with the third eye is the witnessing center. So you can do that in your meditation. Go up to the third eye and stay there for 5 minutes or even longer and feel and be conscious that you're sifting into a witnessing place. And you can witness your breath, or when a feeling comes up, then you're witnessing. And really try to get a sense of what it's like to be witnessing something and then to be immersed in it. You know, there's that sense of stepping back. And once you recognize the difference, that's an important step. And then whenever you're not witnessing, you can make the deliberate effort to go to that place. So that's part of your path. And that's what you try to convey to your client. Like, let's start talking about this week's work. You know, this week's work was all about empathic connection with your client, right? And how to handle yourself in your client relationship. So being able to be in that witnessing place with your client is how you're transmuting the energy to them. It's like, you know, osmosis. You're opening your energy to them and you're transmitting this higher place potential to them. That's one of the benefits of working with a therapist. You know, we're calling it energetic infusion. That's what you're transmitting to your client. It's this sense of you being present within yourself with your boundaries still. You're not merging with your client or taking on their energies, but you're being fully present with them. This is what we're going to work with today, so that's why I'm recapping this. It's developing this stance of how to be present with your client and give them the energetic infusion. So this is all going together. So like when you're talking to them, you're witnessing as well. You're not in a conversational mode. That's one of the things that I hope came across with the material. And when you're in therapeutic mode, it's not conversational mode. It's a different kind of mode. It's like right brain mode. And one of the things I wanted to just point out about it was that I was using the light and the earth as therapeutic tools, which I would encourage you to start thinking of them. Whenever I get gender-based issues, my first inclination is to stay with the light and the earth and to see where the client is with the light and the earth. If they're resisting or can't contact either of those two, that means there's that inner blocking to the inner male or female. So that gives me a beautiful, almost immediate insight into, you know, their character development, which probably not other therapies would be able to offer you. Once I had that, it just kept developing to this place where she was more at home, where she was stronger with the male, and she seemed to agree with that. Yeah. But she's in rejection of the male. So this is really quite interesting from a, you know, psychological standpoint. So that was like the beginning point of going deeper, how we would work with this. Why does she have this rejection of the male? Or maybe it's not so much why, because that's a left brain inquiry, right, which we want to avoid. But it would be, let's investigate that rejection to the male just by staying with it and seeing what's there. And we would expect that probably some kind of something would flash up, either from a not that it has to go back to childhood, or not that it has to go back to alternative lives, but we would expect something like that might happen. Why is there but what's behind this resistance to the male? So that would be the direction that this would take in future sessions.
I also really liked your work with the light, John. And it made it more clear to me now why we ask after we've initiated the light from above and the energy from below, why we ask how you're feeling.
Right.
Kind of instead of just a general, yeah, I feel good, we're actually looking to see how they relate to it.
And right.
But after that, I realized that actually I could bring in that male energy from above and feel that. And I realized over the last few days, I have had a bit of resistance to bringing in that, the female grounding energy. And then it all tied in. I've got these blocks in my female side and my left side. And it came out yesterday in a meditation that I am resisting the female in me. So that's really interesting. And it'd be lovely to pass that or just work with that knowledge with clients.
Great. Yeah, those are all excellent comments. Yeah, that's why we ask, how are you doing with the light of the earth? And we want to get a careful response so you can start to determine what their relationship is to the inner male and female. It's a great starting point for, you know, almost any client. Yeah, so those are all great comments, and that really drives home what we're doing with the light and the earth. It's not just simply connecting to a healing energy, although it's that too, but it's using it as a diagnostic tool.